I mean, because you really are dealing with children who are like in the throes of puberty. Like, maybe we just talked about what a nightmare it must be just navigating the set, right? These kids are also like their hormones are like firing on all cylinders, right? And you're right. You know, it's like somebody's going to have a crush on Amanda Bynes. Somebody's going to have a crush on Drake Bell. Like there is a level of dreamy.
Tiger
What was
Beat
the
X appeal.
Tiger Beat? That's exactly what I said. Like there, you have the Tiger Beat. They're trying to capture that. Okay, like you are walking a very fine line with that shit. But to be like, oh yeah, like. Of course, you're hiring attractive kids. Like some of them are going to grow up. The Victoria Justice, Jesus Christ, are we kidding?
You're chumming the water,
Yeah,
Nickelodeon.
Ariana Grande is like went on to be like this freaking dick puppet for Pete Davidson.
Really
Okay, clip eight here. I called Checks and Balances. Dan talks about the approval process on the shows.
notion that I had the power to just produce whatever I wanted and have it is completely false.
Okay.
There were many, many levels of scrutiny. Okay? We had executives in LA. We had executives in New York.
So two coasts.
Two coasts
Okay.
of
Both coasts.
approval. Yes. And by the way, approval at every stage, really.
Okay.
And I'm talking about wardrobe. I'm talking about makeup, sound, sets, dialogue, jokes, everything.
Andy, two coasts. Two coasts? Who gives a shit? What does that even matter? Who's fucking approving it? So you're
Yeah.
saying they scrutinized everything but the safety of the children on set. Sounds legit.
He said a boardroom of 12 white guys on two different coasts said it was okay to squirt lotion on Victoria Justice's face.
That was Jamie Lynn Spears, who the other rumor is that Dan impregnated Jamie Lynn Spears on Zoe
Oh.
101 was the other show. So that was another long-standing rumor of why Dan Schneider's a creep, just
Ugh.
FYI. But
That
that
poor child.
squirting lotion in a younger Britney Spears lookalike's face. People had run. Also, that's you making that creepy, by the way. All the people are just like, that's a fucking cum shot on a child. Slow down, ma'am. Okay. I know you like facials, but that doesn't mean that that's what this is. It's green. Or maybe the gentleman needs to see a doctor, according to you. In our next clip here, called The Bosses, this rings true to me.
Not my color. No, these are my bosses. Bosses, and then their bosses, and then their bosses. And they're approving all of this stuff,
Okay.
okay? And we're also shooting it in front of all sorts of adults and caregivers and the set teacher and the families. Everybody's watching it. And if anybody had said anything, hey, we don't like that. That's not appropriate. Then it would have been cut out. If nobody on the set, if all of the dozens and dozens of adults that were on the set, if they didn't say anything, if my bosses said, if they insisted, you've got to make a change here, you got to cut that, I had to do it. I had no choice.
So clearly things were missed, overlooked, taken, not taken into account. We're examining decades of content here. You know, I just get really irritated at a witch hunt on gross out humor and an army of executives that had oversight on these projects. Okay, let's not forget that once again, you can't do that on television. It was the Garbage Pail Kids come to life at one point. Okay. Like there is gross, the gross out humor is the point. It's the point. It's a fine line to walk.
These kids are getting bukkakied by the Jolly Green Giant over here, and everybody's signing off on it. None of the stage parents are trying to keep their kid. They're all waiting for the check to clear, and
Right.
they're not worried about their kid getting skeeted up.
Right. Amanda Bynes' mom is just like, lean into it more, honey.
Get some more in your eye.
Yeah. Act
Guys
like
like
you like
that.
it.
guys like that when you wipe it out of your eye.
Just swallow it, honey. Ugh, so okay, so clip 10 here is like Fear Factor for kids. This was called like On Air Dares.
To do their version of Fear Factor. So we get with the writers and we come up with all these ideas, and it's hard to do because we don't have the budget of Fear Factor. Sure. And we can't put the kids in dangerous situations like the adults are put in. So kids. It was hard to, yeah, hard to come up with stuff. But we would come up with all these ideas of dares they could do. We would give them to the network, and they would say, tell us the ones that were okay.
Right.
I now know that there were kids who did have problems with the on-air dares. And it breaks my heart. And I'm so sorry. I am so sorry to any kid who ever had to do a dare or anything that they didn't want to do or weren't comfortable doing.
Yeah. So it's not much of a dare if you love it. You know, like what are we talking about? You know, I do have to say that this part of the doc seemed ill-conceived, and it didn't make for a great show anyway. I don't know the whole premise, but if it played more like a high stakes truth or dare between the kids on the show, that may have been better. It was all like very dark and like ominous. Like I didn't care for it at all. The whole part looked not good, you know, like, but that's just like a bad idea.
They were trying to do Fear Factor. Fear Factor was popular. They decided they would try and do the same thing with their stable of actors who all agreed to be on the show. You didn't have to do that if you didn't want the paycheck. It was all the same kids. It's not like this is what all that is now, is us covering you in sardines. That's not what happened. These kids were presented an opportunity they said yes to. And yeah. Again, to your point, it's not much of a show if they're just like, oh, you got to eat all this ice cream. That's the dare. Yeah. And watching somebody eat ice cream, or yeah. And then they're like, you know what? I don't want to eat ice cream today. I'm not going to do it. Well, what kind of show is that? Where you're not forced to do something that is cringy. The show is supposed to be cringy and outrageous. And they always had a little bit of like scary content that Are You Afraid of the Dark and some of these other things that they've done on the show. So
yeah.
having that fear element, and it wasn't new to the show, and those kids agreed to do it. So don't look at it with Monday morning quarterback eyes and say, I really didn't enjoy it when I had peanut butter all over me and that dog was kind of going after my balls. Like that, really? Yeah. Were you traumatized by that? Really? Yeah.
I mean, it may be worth noting, but it's certainly not the focus of it. And even really putting it in the documentary, I find it like just weakens the story a little bit. Right. You know, people, the kids, the people, but it speaks to that the comfortability of the children was not the point half the time.
Or it whatever. Wasn't like it wasn't paramount. It wasn't Dan Snyder's top priority, making the kids feel as comfortable as possible on a show where they're covering them with bugs.
Yeah. Yeah. We're paying you. Eat the fucking scorpion.
Or don't. Or quit.
Or don't. Or fail at the show or whatever. Who gives a shit? We all get a paycheck on Friday. So here, enter Amanda Bynes. Amanda Bynes ended up being almost like partner. Well, you'd say the Tippi Hedren to Dan Schneider's Hitchcock, maybe, right? His muse, for so to speak. For she came on All That, was like killing it, insanely popular, and they spun it off into her own show. And Dan Schneider. That was like Dan Schneider riding, call it a partnership, whatever. He was the one to make the Amanda show, to say, this is the girl, we're going to give her own show, and I'm going to be in charge of all of it. And it was tremendously popular.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was like it was like the Carol Burnett show for a 13-year-old.
Right. So let's have a look. This is kind of the height of her powers. And you have Drake Bell in the clip here, too.
It was your turn to speak, mister. I can't keep my mouth shut.
No.
Stay close. Yapper flapper.
Yapper flapper.
Thank you. Now, Jason, please tell me your complaint.
Well, I really wanted to visit Doozyland, the world's greatest amusement park.
Yes, I'm a big fan of Doozyland myself. Continue.
Well, it's pretty expensive, so I had to get some money.
Yeah, I wonder what he did for the money.
Little boy so, blue. Hey.
So that's Amanda Bynes doing, you know, a Judge Judy impression. And, you know, for an 11-year-old, I would say she's fucking killing it. I thought it was funny. Like, I'm laughing it as an older guy. And I'm like, I think it's decent. You know, yeah. Like, I think what they're doing there, maybe, you know, hack. But the whole, it's children's programming. It's all fucking hack. But. So that's Amanda Bynes.
What she's become is insane compared to that. It's not even the
hang
same
on, person. Hang on. You're getting a little ahead of me there. Okay. So in this clip, let's hear Dan talk about Amanda. So they were very enmeshed. Their careers were like almost tied together, right? And he was very much a mentor to her. I think in the documentary, we can see that she had like older parents, right? She was like a young kid with her parents looked, I don't know about at the time, but like at the older, her parents looked like they're in their 60s when she's a teenager. Okay. So they're a bit of an older couple and she wanted to live her own life because she's, you know, been a millionaire since she was 11, basically. So she wants to get emancipated.
Amanda was between the ages of 16 and 17, and she wanted to get emancipated from her parents, which was a fairly common thing with successful young actors, at least at the time.
Sure.
And she wanted that for herself. So she turned to her team, which included her lawyer, her agent, her manager, her publicist, me, because she included me as part of her team, thought of me that way. We supported her. She tried to get emancipated and ended up not working out. And she didn't.
I don't know much about this, but I think Drake Bell talks about working with Dan at one point. I think the other thing, you know, this all comes out as fucked up as Amanda Bynes may be now. You don't see her running to any type of media source to call Dan Schneider an asshole, right?
Right. So maybe the person that has the most reasons to illustrate how they got fucked up, it's not present to say that was part of the problem.
Right. You would think that would be the person if she considered it his fault. This is the time for everybody to come. Now they talk about like NDAs and shit like that. And that like people might be, you know, gagged. There might be gag orders in place or they just simply can't.
It did seem like a lot of the people that were invited on there, a lot of it was sour grapes about the fact that their careers didn't go like Kenan Thompson's did.
Right.
You know, a lot of it was just like, oh man, it really sucks being a child actor and peaking at 12 and then the rest of your life is lackluster.
Yeah,
I got that vibe from a few of the people that were being interviewed.
You use the exact term that I thought the whole time. There's a lot of sour grapes in this documentary for sure. So, but before we say all that, let's have a look at what Amanda Bynes is up to now.
And welcome to Amanda Bynes and Paul Simansky, the podcast. Today we are welcoming Dahlia Moth on our show.
Hi, everyone.
Nice. Hello, everybody. Hi, I am Paul. And welcome to our beautiful guest, Dahlia.
Hello. Hi.
For the people, if you're listening or are watching, that person on the left is Amanda Bynes. If you can believe it.
Face tattoos, bleach blonde, like looking like bloated from some whatever 10 fucking antidepressants they got her on to manage her bipolar disorder. Like it's hard to say how much Hollywood fucked her up and how much like she really is just fucked up at this point.
Yeah. She went from being
and that podcast looked like dog shit.
Yeah. And she went from being a female 12-year-old Jim Carrey to being a grown-up emo Eeyore. So she's definitely on some kind of meds or has a chemical imbalance that has completely changed her personality.
Yeah, yeah. Or she's just like out of ideas or acting like Judge Judy when you're in your 30s is not funny anymore.
Yeah, but yeah. Who knows? She came to her senses. But she did like legit go AWOL with mental problems at one point. Between the Amanda show and the podcast.
And she had already transitioned into like, she was making movies and stuff. Like she had transitioned into more of a teen young adult career.
Career wise. Career with her job. Not her gender.
What she
transitioned.
Oh no, that was Paul. That was the other one.
Gay Jesus.
So now we get into the most vomitous part of the documentary here. So Brian Peck molested and raped Drake Bell over a considerable amount of time. My stomach was literally turning when I watched this segment, and here Dan reacts to it.
Not hire Brian Peck. This was a Tolan Robbins production. Yeah. And when Drake and I talked and he told me what had happened, I was more devastated by that than anything that ever happened to me in my career thus far. Mm. And I told him, I'm here for you. What do you need? Which Drake mentioned in the show that we watched last night.
Right. So once again, you know, anybody, the most tremendous victim in this, who would have every right to take Dan to task over whatever, didn't. And he literally, like, Dan didn't even say it there. Drake Bell in the documentary says, Dan may be the only person that supported me throughout this shit. All right. So whatever, you know, that might be a small thing on a huge pile of shit, but it bears at least taking into account. Now,
and not to move on from that too quick, you had people like James Marsden and Tyrone Gilliam and these big recognizable names.
Alan Thicke, you're grounded. Yeah,
Alan Thicke going to bat for, like, the way that Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis went to bat for Danny Masterson. They're showing up in court and writing character letters to a judge for a guy that openly admitted that he was raping a 15-year-old for an extended period of time. You're going to show up and say, oh, yeah, I worked with him. He was pretty cool. What are you doing, James Marsden?
Yeah. What are you doing, Cyclops? So the thing that
some
I want to
hero, point- some X-Man.
So... protect me, save me, James Marsden. So the thing I don't want to skip over here at all, it's actually the thing we're almost treading on similar ground to everybody else, but the thing that nobody's bringing up here that I think demands to be pointed out, and Boogie, whatever the interviewer there goes, so I love his drop-ins are always like the stupidest fucking thing too. So this was a Tolan Robbins production, all right? Wait, while that deflects the blame from Dan Schneider on this whole topic, the Robbins in that is Brian Robbins, okay? The head of Nickelodeon, the head of Paramount Plus, the buck stops here, El Jefe of children's programming, helped build it from the ground up. He was also Dan's co-star on Head of the Class. Let's have a look at this real quick here. I want to show you. Here we go. This is the opening of Head of the Class. Slowed it down a little bit. So there's Dan Schneider on this side here on the left here. Oh, poor Arvid. He's getting bullied. Watch out, Arvid. The guy on the other side there is Brian Robbins. So Dan Schneider and Brian Robbins have been side by side partners in this for their entire careers since they were child stars, teenage stars on Head of the Class. Okay. Brian Robbins directed Varsity Blues. I think he directed Good Burger. He is the in charge guy of everything Nickelodeon, everything Paramount Plus streaming. Entrenched. He is children's programming at Paramount. And he's walking through the fucking raindrops on this. Nowhere is he mentioned, aside from, oh, it's a Tolan Robbins production. Oh, okay. What does that mean? No, so you're just saying it's not a Dan Schneider didn't do it. Yeah. Okay.
There wasn't a set of people around witnessing him molesting kids.
Right. Right. So Brian Robbins is somehow, you know, getting away with this. He may be making the broad stroke decisions for the company, but he's also the reason that Dan had zero fear of reprisal or accountability on set. The reason Dan conducted himself the way he did, be it misogynistic, just simply acting like an asshole, he always knew that his buddy was sitting in the fucking boss's chair and nothing would ever happen to him. Complaining up the chain about Dan Schneider was never going to get anyone anywhere. All right. So I can only speculate that Brian had complete trust in Dan and allowed him godlike control over these kids. And anyone pointing the finger at Dan was not going far enough. Okay. This all falls in Brian's lap, but you probably have to move a kid out of the way for it to land there.
Yeah.
Okay. So Drake,
I heard that Dan Schneider's next show is going to be called Head from the Class.
Drake Bell has had his own issues, right? Like, so there was, I don't know what it was. Drake Bell is like a Mexican Leif Garrett, or, you know, like Danny Bonaduce. Like he turned his Tiger Beat stardom into a music career. And when people say he's big in Japan, Drake Bell is big in Mexico. All right. Like he's like a huge career, music career in Mexico. All right. So, but he also, like, he was like chatting with a 13-year-old online or something like that. She came to his like music shows and he had like quote unquote inappropriate contact with a minor or something like that. But he like owns it. Like it all went through. It's nothing like these guys. It's nothing like, you know, the guy that raped him endlessly and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And he was almost like catfished by a 13-year-old. It's probably like more embarrassing. I don't know if that's true. I don't know anything. I didn't research this at all, but he's definitely had his own fucking things. So in our next clip here, we get into what you were talking about, Andy, the James Marsdens. So let's watch this clip about Drake Bell coming into the courtroom and what he has to deal with now.
And next, I heard that he went to court when this guy was being tried, Peck. And when Drake walked in, he saw 50 people sitting on the side of the courtroom supporting Peck. A lot of them pretty famous. Of course, Drake was devastated that that happened. And even more disappointing, 41 of those people wrote letters for Peck, character letters, praising him for who he was and asking for leniency. And they knew that he was guilty. They knew he had confessed to some degree. Mm-hmm. And they still did this.
Yeah. So one of the things,
did you like Boogie's drop in there at the end? He also said,
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Boogie then said,
Man, you tripping.
I just love that. Everybody knew I should have a Senko drop. I needed to work in there. No. So we're having a lot of fun here today, but pedophiles getting off scot-free is no laughing matter. I mean, so
it's the most egregious part of the doc. I mean, brave of Drake Bell to come out and speak so candidly about pretty much the most horrific thing. I can't think of a lot of more worse things to happen to a child than what he went through. It was pretty hard to watch.
Yeah. Anybody who's listening to this, not watching or hasn't seen the documentary, Drake, the interviewer asked Drake Bell about like what Brian Peck did to him. And he said, use your imagination on like the worst shit that you can possibly think of. Like throw the hottest looking 18-year-old into a Supermax prison. And what are they going to do to him? And that's what happened to Drake Bell. Okay.
Jim Norton's Uncle Paul showed up, and
it's all in the statements. They show written accounts of this, you know, all of it. I'm not going to get into it. It really does turn my stomach what this guy did to him. But that, Andy, you pointed out, sounds like Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis, you know, the letters supporting this guy.
He kept taking but the one Disneyland.
The one thing that
is code for you're going to get raped tonight. Let's go to Disneyland.
The one thing that I want to point out here that this is me speculating, but I can almost guarantee that this is 100% true. Alan Thicke and Joanna Kearns wrote some of these letters. So what that means is that Brian Peck was a dialogue coach on Growing Pains. So I don't know that this maybe speaks to, we can only start speculating on the projects and things like that, that kind of ancillary get brought up here and see like, oh, well, that explains why this person's fucked up. So this may explain why Kirk Cameron became like super religious, you know, or he's just like, he saw this path or something happening. He's like, oh, Brian Peck has dialogue that he wants to go over with you, Kurt. And he's like, I got fucking Bible study. I'm not going with that guy. Okay.
They show molesting Leonardo, DiCaprio. You're rubbing his arm. Look how he's touching him like a pedophile.
Yeah. Yeah. They're showing Brian Peck like all groping on fucking Leonardo DiCaprio and shit. Yeah.
That's the long way around to saying that guy molested Leonardo DiCaprio, by the way. That's what that guy's asserting by saying that.
It is, and I think that is a valid assertion in one way, or I don't know if he ever was able to corner Leonardo DiCaprio, but you could say that this guy potentially molested Leonardo DiCaprio. But what it also does is put a fucking arrow in the quiver of Brian Peck to be like, I worked with Leonardo DiCaprio, and Drake Bell, you'll never be Leonardo DiCaprio if you don't work with me. You better study your dialogue with me. I made Leo who he is. Do you want to be Leo? You better fucking speak into the microphone. And by the microphone, I mean my dick. Right. Like, I guarantee he used it as his Excalibur to fucking molest any kid that he could fucking convince it was okay. You know, I worked with Leo, and you'll never be Leo if you don't let me violate you repeatedly. It's completely despicable. It's
very gross.
In the next clip here,
we're having Dan a lot Cox, of fun, aren't we, everyone?
In the next clip, Dan talks about helping Drake's mom with their courtroom shit.
A lovely woman who I stay in contact with this day. She came to me at the time and she said, "Dan, I'm not good with words like you are, and would you help me with my speech for the judge?" And I said, "Of course." And I did. And he ended up going to prison and serving his time. And yeah, that was probably the darkest part of my career.
The phrase, let's skip the tears for a second here, or let's put that on pause. Back burner. Excuse me. The phrase, "He served his time," I find odd. I'm not sure child rape qualifies for the leniency that the phrase like that implies. Yeah, he sodomized the 15-year-old boy nonstop, but he served his time. Yeah, I don't think that's how that fucking works.
Yeah.
Okay. I stole cars to fucking make ends meet one time, but I served my time. Okay, I can accept that. No, there's no expiration date on raping children.
Each count of molestation counts as an hour of time served. That's what Dan Snyder thinks.
He served his time. Also, stow the crocodile tears, dickhead. No one's falling for it.
Yeah. She said, "You're so good at words." Yeah, well, it doesn't sound like you're very good at words. The whole time Boogie's looking at him like,
"Chill him out.
What are you doing right now? I haven't seen this much emotion out of you in 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. It's the best acting you've done since Head of the Class.
It's the most acting you've done since Dennis smashed Arvid's fucking Texas Instruments calculator. Okay, in the next clip, this is called What I Don't Get.
here's the kicker that I really don't get. After he got out of prison and was, to my knowledge, a registered sex offender, he was hired on a Disney Channel show. I don't understand that. I don't understand.
Yeah. I appreciate you sharing it, man. Are you okay? You want to take a minute?
Yeah, I'm all right. Let's keep going.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's nice. You can act like a man, Dan, okay? This seems super fucked up and therefore not real, in my opinion, okay? I think if you read between the lines or understand this completely, Brian Peck did, like, some temp work or background actor thing on The Suite Life with fucking Zach and Cody or whatever it was. That was the show that he ended up getting working on or whatever.
Oh, I thought it was the prequel to Peter Pan, the Lost Boys show, where Brian Peck just chased all the little boys around Neverland. Instead, he was like Captain Hook, but instead he had a dildo on his hand and a pirate hat. And he would try and get all the Lost Boys down into his pirate ship.
Right. He gets work on a Disney show and they act like he was hired to make sure that the children have all been bathed well that day. If this isn't exaggerated, I'll eat my hat. You know, what it seems like gets glossed over in this portion of the story is how fucking many, like, people who are only there for a day get filtered through, like background actors, just day workers and things like that. They're not doing background checks for every single person. They want you to believe that Brian Peck was fucking hired to, you know, be a star on Disney after he was, you know, convicted of raping children. I just don't buy that. Like,
It's a way to slight Disney. It's their biggest competitor. It's like
100%.
Oh, Nickelodeon, Nickelodeon's way better. We fire our pedophiles. Disney's over there hiring pedophiles.
100% accurate.
Pepsi can't compete with our Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Oh, you think Nickelodeon has a pedophile problem? Well, don't forget about Disney's pedophile problem. Okay. So in clip 17 here, how can we improve, Dan?
Hiring young actors, minors, to work in television, I would suggest that we have a licensed therapist there to oversee that process for the specific reason of making sure that those kids really wanted to do this job, that they really wanted to be on television.
Yeah.
Maybe they should even be informed about what that means. What's it going to mean if you're famous? What's that going to mean on social media? What's it going to mean within your family? Right. Let them find out. And then that way, if a kid doesn't want to be on a TV show, they can opt out.
Opt out. Right. Yeah. Well done, Natalie. You did great on the acting and swimsuit portions of the casting couch process, but let's see how mentally fragile you are and if that can be further exploited. Great idea, Dan.
Yes. Would you like an opportunity to be on television and potentially super famous like Ariana Grande, or would you rather opt out? Those are your choices.
Yeah. I wonder which one they'll pick.
Yeah. Did I neglect to mention that getting molested is part of the first deal?
Dude, that was one of the most fucked up parts of the documentary too, because Drake Bell at the end, he's just like, would I fucking change everything that happened to me? Would I go back and not land a gig on Nickelodeon? Like, if I, you know, he's just like, it gave me some of the most amazing parts of my life. And it also gave me some of the fucking most horrific parts of my life. And if you said we could take it all away, I don't know the choice that I would make.
Oh, yeah.
That was fucking crazy.
Well, if it's a deal with the devil where he's just like, you're going to be super famous and get all the puss and be big in Mexico, but the cost of that is 100 rapes with a gross man. Now, do you want to make that deal? You can opt out.
In clip 18 here, Dan, if you had a time machine, what would you go back and change?
Main thing that I would change is how I treat people and everyone. I definitely at times didn't give people the best of me. I didn't show enough patience. I could be cocky and definitely overambitious and sometimes just straight up rude and obnoxious. And I am so sorry that I ever was.
So not warn people about 9/11, yeah. Not go back and molest then kill baby Hitler. It's just all about Dan, I guess. It's all about Dan's personal 9/11. Never forget. No, I'm having a little fun with that. I don't think it was about if you had a time machine and you could change anything, but I couldn't resist the 9/11 joke.
My point is that so was every other person on that set. Everything that he said that he was, that people didn't like about him, every other person was like that too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And maybe not everyone, but there was many personalities on that set that people have different moods that they're in over the course of 20 years of producing television. So just because he was short-tempered with the script supervisor once doesn't add up to him being a terrible person to me. I mean, I think he's a terrible person for other things that he caps to, but like I said, my boss isn't nice enough to me is not a great point to make.
Being a stressed out lunatic who is hyper focused on being successful is not the worst thing that you can be.
That's how people become successful.
Right. You mean Hollywood's filled up full of self-centered narcissists who are hell bent on their own success? Oh, what? I forgot to wear my pearls, Andy. In clip 19, which I called Hurt People, it's a do better.
I watched the show. I could see the hurt in some people's eyes, and it made me feel awful and regretful and sorry. I wish I could go back, you know, especially to those earlier years of my career and bring the growth and the experience that I have now and just do a better job and never, ever feel like it was okay to be an asshole to anyone ever.
It sounds like you were surrounded by people that needed to be treated like assholes to me, in my experience. Acting like less of an asshole is rarely the solution. I'm here to promote being a bigger asshole. Be a bigger asshole to pedophiles and less of an asshole to the parents of the black actors on the show. That would be my suggestion.
I agree with that.
Andy's going to say less because this has gone on too long. We're getting close to the end here. This is my second last clip here. This wraps up the interview portion here, which I called this Mission Impossible, but at what cost?
Look, I wanted to make funny TV shows for kids, and we definitely did that. But if I could go back, I would get it done in different ways. I'd just be nicer as often as possible. And listen more to the people on my team. And I would do everything that I could to make sure that everyone had a good experience. That's what I do differently.
So not hire the equivalent of the Inglourious Bastards to hunt pedophiles on the Nickelodeon backlot? Got it. All about Dan here. I would be nicer and implement a no shoes policy anywhere on set.
Yeah.
Okay.
It did seem that it started out like more fun. He was having more fun with it. And then as the years went on and he became more successful, he just became more driven to, it just became more about the numbers, I guess, than the joy of making a show. But
yeah,
it's hard to say.
I just want to point out like the books under the art here.
Oh yeah.
Like how absolutely scripted and set up everything down to his brand new shoes that I pointed out before. The book, if you look at the interviewer side, there's like an old radio, an old timey radio also right. up on two books, like cut the shot in a specific way. I just want to point out how scripted every single fucking thing in this is. Okay. It was completely planned to the timing of its release, to everything that's said, to his tears, to the reactions, to everything, all the topics they chose to address and didn't choose to address, completely handled in a very specific way. So lest we forget, like this is the apology of an asshole.
Oh, yeah, it's like the NFL handling an apology tour.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you have like an army of PR people handling this for sure.
Is he still employed with Nickelodeon and whatever?
No, no. $7 million golden parachute out of there. Asked to leave by his friend Brian Robbins said, "Dan, I need you to take all the heat for this because, Andy, we have a major release on our hands coming out. Let's have Brian Robbins tell us about how Nickelodeon does business as we wrap this all up.
Direct to consumer relationships with our audiences. And you know what the audience is telling us right now is they want more. They want more of the characters they love and the stories they love. Hence the Paw Patrol movie today. And if we get it right, you know, we could create sort of one of the most important things you could have with a franchise, and that's love. And with that love comes loyalty. And we know that consumers want more than just watching the film or the TV show. You know, they want to ride the ride. They want to wear the pajamas, use the toothpaste. And, you know, that's the case with Paw Patrol. It's not only the biggest preschool franchise in the world from viewership, but it's also a CP juggernaut for us.
Oh, a what juggernaut? So I just want to point out, so once I just said it, Dan was paid $7 million to leave.
That's not enough. That's not a lot.
That's because of Brian Robbins there asking him to take the fall guy in this matter. And let's just keep Brian Robbins. I mean, Brian Levine, by the way, please everyone, if you take anything away from this, it is that Brian Robbins, AKA Brian Levine, he is really the guy behind all of this. Okay. Behind this nasty mess. And
he does look like a lizard person.
Paw Patrol merch to settle. They want to squirt their toothpaste in your kid's mouth, and they want your kids wearing their pajamas. And they're probably a bad abbreviation for creative property at this point, Brian. Yeah. To call it CP. Brian has all of this. He's having the best and most CP on his external hard drive. Brian wants to send pedophiles direct to the customers. Brian is worried about what pajamas your kids are wearing. Okay. Why have I not heard from Brian in this matter? Okay. Yeah. All right.
So, you know, Brian Robbins likes about the Paw Patrol movie is that the second AD can't fuck the cast. It's really hard for a pedophile to have sex with a cartoon. That's why Nickelodeon is only going to do cartoons from now on.
It would probably be a fucking smart move at this point, like for what we're seeing here. But I don't, if anybody, I wanted the takeaway here to be Brian Robbins is responsible in the end for all of it. I mean, obviously maybe he didn't fuck kids, but you know what? But what I did take away from this a lot though, was that I think his oldest son is 17. I watched a little bit about interviews with Brian Robbins, just trying to, you know, catch him in any type of fucking pedophile accidental misspeak or something like that.
You did catch him. You saw him. You're like, oh, there he is. There's a pedophile right there.
He said CP. No, but what it did seem like is like these guys have functioned in like this bro code environment side by side for years. He had boys when they were growing up. And so if he was using his own children as like the focus group at any point. They would be like, oh, Jamie Lynn Spears is attractive, Amanda Bynes is attractive, Victoria Justice is attractive. He's only getting like a male perspective. We talked about the iCarly writer's room being all white bros and shit like that. I think like one of the major problems of this whole thing is that it was like just heavily skewed into like a male perspective all the time. Once again, gross out humor. Who does gross out humor better? You know, but I think it was just like a lack of diversity all the way around, and it became super toxic, you know, in the worst ways, you know, like to be that. But please, everyone, internet, weaponize everything you have. Don't forget about Brian Robbins. Okay. The responsibility lands directly. Move the child out of his way so it can land directly into his lap. If I can call back my joke that I used already. But that is this gross story, everyone.
Yeah. Coach, somebody take that clip and take the line graph out of the clip behind him and put Brian Peck holding a giant plate of pickles that with a sign that says Drake Bell was here, and put that on behind Brian Robbins on everything that he does.
But I mean, also great point. Like one of the things that they showed with that pickle fucking bit that they were doing with Brian Peck is like Ray Romano is like locked in a room, right? The doorknob fell off the door and he can't get out, and he's like hungry, and what's he gonna eat? What, Ray Romano needs something to eat, everybody. And it looks like Brian Peck's shoving a pickle through a glory hole, you know, into Ray Romano. Like even the shit that didn't have anything to do with kids looked like you're feeding Ray Romano a pickle through a glory hole, and he's just like, oh, it's the best pickle I ever had. It was just like there's just kind of like a fucked up vibe.
It was
for the whole thing.
It was act one of a gay porno.
Ray Romano gets pickled by Brian Peck. Pick a peck of pickles from Brian Peck. But yeah, that's that.
So Dan Snyder, Joe, what are we going to give him for his 20-minute apology tour about Drake Bell getting molested by somebody else?
Fuck him.
I don't hear it.
He sucks.
Fuck you!
Yeah.
For all the shit that I feel like he was creepy and guilty of, I also feel there's a maybe like a 50-50 dose between you're a creep, don't make people give you massages to like trivial things that were just kind of like you I'm sorry you had a bad day at work. You know,
yeah,
it was kind of one-to-one comparison between stories like that in the doc.
Yeah, I think this speaks to legal matters where they're like, well, we're not going to charge him on that because we know they can beat that or that can't be proven, right? Like you don't just because somebody was like a notorious fuck up their entire life or a piece of shit and they've done many, many illegal things, it becomes what can you prove? And that's where I think the documentary failed a little bit. It's a very compelling story. There's tons and tons of fucked up shit that you can make it a 3-part series instead of a 4-part series and leave out all the shit that really doesn't matter, you know, or that you can't actually prove, because I think it actually damaged the documentary in a way. Because they focused on everything instead of on the facts.
Yeah. Well, I would encourage anybody that if you're listening to this and you have HBO, check it out. It's pretty interesting, especially if you like true crime the Drake Bell stuff is very, very compelling.
Watch it on an empty stomach.
Yeah. It's pretty upsetting, but not because of Dan Snyder entirely. It's mainly because of the other one of the several pedophiles that worked for Nickelodeon at some point.
We only focus on one pedophile on this show. There was two other pedophiles. One they covered a little extensively, and the other one was like kind of a throwaway thing. But yeah, multiple pedophiles in Nickelodeon, everyone. Yeah. So
But you know where there are no pedophiles, Joe?
On our Patreon.
Yes, thank you. Now you're starting to see my tricks that I do with my segues. But if you we're doing a lot of bonus content on there. And I also want to encourage people to follow us on Instagram. We put apologies from the news every day on there. And you can like and comment and issue and demand apologies. And when you follow us on Instagram. And you can also support the show by subscribing to our YouTube channel and rating and reviewing the show wherever you listen to the podcast. So I'm Andy Q. Public for Joe Stickpack saying...
Hey, sorry.